It's better over here.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Crowd at Wrigley making noise, trying to help Saya at the plate. The payoff pitch. Swing and a miss. Strike 3. Ball game over. The Reds sweep the Cubs, taking the finale 8-5.
Landru thinking about a bunt. I don't know how many bunts Haas has had during the course of his career, but he's normally a power hitter.
That ball's cranked to center field. Robert back on it. Luis makes the catch. Here comes the winning run, and here come the Tigers. 6-5, your final score.
In blue. Mike Esposito on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Stink, stank, stunk.
There was one good thing in that montage there, Steve, and it was Tom Petty.
It was. Running down a dream. Well, are the Cubs and Sox still running down a dream? Welcome in. Rosenblum and Esposito with you this holiday. It's holiday Monday. It is 7:01. And I want to note that I will not be wishing anyone a happy Memorial Day. I will be wishing people a good bit of health on a solemn day. And I welcome you to our airwaves. I welcome everyone, Sox fans, Cub fans, for radiotherapy.
We're here for you.
Here's the good news. Liam Hendricks is coming back from cancer. He should be activated today. He kicked cancer's ass. The Sox closer kicked cancer's ass. So ends your baseball highlights for the entire city. That's the good news. Good night, everybody. Drive home safely. Tip Rick Hahn and Jed Hoyer. So to recap, for those of you joining us here, the Cubs are in last place in the NL Central and are the worst team in the National League. They're the fourth worst team in the majors. The Sox are worse than that. If you were to hold the AL East standings up, you look at Major League standings, and you go division by division, and the AL East goes right down through the AL Central. They're in perfect order.
That's right. They do. Toronto, the last place team in the East, has a half-game lead on Minnesota, who's the AL Central.
The Sox are next to last in the AL Central.
That they are.
Giving everything away against the Tigers. They are the third worst team and in the majors and grateful for the Royals, or they would be the worst. The Sox are closer to last than first. The Cubs are actually closer to first than the White Sox are. This is how bad. They are in the two worst divisions in baseball. They are. This is a remarkable thing. A week's worth of winning away from being in first place, being in the playoffs, being in contention, both teams, as laughably as I'm talking about this. And we need to hear from Jim Carrey when talking about their playoff possibility. Don't we, Leo?
So you're telling me there's a chance.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, that's...
So if you need radiotherapy, 312-644-6767. We are The Score, Chicago Sports Radio. 312-644-6767. That is our listener line, powered by BetQL. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app today. Visit BetQL.com. Our text zone, that same number, 312-644-6767. Gets you to our text zone, brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time, shop online at RosenHyundai.com. This is where we are with the state of it. We're offering you our airwaves as therapy.
But I will give you this, because 2 days ago on these very airwaves on Inside the Clubhouse, after a good week from the White Sox, and the Cubs had a nice start to the week, and the losing streak had not gone to four. They had just lost the opener to the Reds. Bruce and I were looking at the standings and looking at the teams and looking at the divisions, and really, we were glass half full on Saturday morning, all of 48 hours ago. But, you know, because you look, it's the Tigers and it's the Reds, and I'm not trying to pick on either team, but those are teams.
You can pick on them.
If you're a good team, you're going to beat those, you're going to win those series, right? So that is the difficulty. It's not like you came in, for example, Tampa coming in to play the Cubs today.
It's not what they need.
That's not what they need.
The worst team in the National League does not need the Tampa Bay Rays coming in.
If you got swept by the Rays this season, you would be upset, but you would not be like, wow, well, they're beating everybody. The Reds coming in.
They're trying to lose. They're trying to suck.
So the Reds were 21-29, and they are now 24-29 after the Cubs.
There's so much in common with these teams. What you're talking about with the Reds, and what you're talking about with the Tigers against and two a bunch of teams in bad divisions. I dare you to tell me the difference. And does either team have a manager you trust?
AJ Hinch. I mean, based on his Astros.
No, I'm talking about the Cubs and Sox.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the Tigers or the Reds.
No, AJ Hinch has no leadership, and see the Houston Astros for details. But let's just talk about David Ross and Pedro Grifol. Do you trust either one of them?
I'll start with the Sox because it's an easy no, and I'm not trying to pick on Pedro Grifol. It's like we're still getting to know him, right? I mean, his first year, at this point, he's a no, right? You don't know what the heck he's going to be long term. I would say I have a lot more faith in Rossi, and we heard
based
from this
what?
This week. No. I'm just saying the Jed Hoyer comments. I believe it was Tuesday. It might have been Wednesday, but when he basically said, you know, the blame is on me for that bullpen and, you know, the guys out there aren't performing and this is on me. Don't put this on Rossi because basically he has minimal options out there in terms of end of game stuff, right? There's Mark Leiter Jr., who was a non-roster spring training invitee, who's your best guy out there. And outside of that, they've struggled. I mean, Fulmer was supposed to close.
His bullpen's horrible. It's horrible. The bullpen's changed
Boxberg,
all the time.
Boxberger's hurt. Fulmer, who had closed before, and you could call him probably the biggest name they brought in the offseason for that bullpen, has been good in the past, has not been good this year, right? That's not even debatable. Leiter has been really good, though. And I'm good with Adbert Alzolay. I know he has had his ups and downs, too, but I think he is one of your better arms out there. But anyway, Jed was basically trying to deflect and say, I've got this, right? This is my bad. You know, we need to get better in that bullpen. Now, does that absolve some of the in-game moves of David Ross? I don't know. And I'm not saying I have more faith in Rossi as a guy who knows the game and who is a guy who's been around. You kind of get a feel for what he wants to do. But on the South side, and nothing personal versus Pedro Grifol. I don't know the man. I've never talked to him. He's 2 months into his tenure. And it's not been a good one so far.
He sounds like a rookie manager.
Yes.
Now, Pedro Grifol's team is bad defensively, isn't that smart on the bases, and isn't up for every game.
That sounds familiar.
It does. Remember, Pedro Grifol was the guy who took the job and like cut him. He was on, there's a video of whatever happens, we're going to get ready and we're going to kick your ass every
night. That's right.
Well, no, you're not ready. You're not kicking everybody's ass. And you sound like a rookie manager. So the same problems that existed before exist now, and the manager hasn't fixed them. And he should learn his pitchers, by the way. He learn who his pitchers are, what they're capable of doing. And yesterday was a perfect example. So you have Kendall Graveman throwing how many? Count them.
I did count them. He pitched six pitches in the one inning of work that he put in yesterday.
And Pedro Grifol put in Joe Kelly, who had thrown like what, almost 30 the day before. Okay. Kendall Graveman has multiple inning experience. So naturally, Pedro Grifol, the rookie manager, was asked, what about Graveman going into the ninth? And we have Pedro Grifol talking about that.
discussion about having Friedman possibly go the ninth?
We talked about that early, and we liked the pocket in the eighth. We liked the pocket in the ninth. Kelly's been one of the best pitchers in baseball for the last 3 weeks, 4 weeks, if not the best. So I'm certainly not going to shy away from Kelly in that type of situation. You know, so, I mean, it kind of played out the way we scripted it, you know, before the game, and I wouldn't do it any other way.
Well, then you're a loser. There's no way you would do that again. You can't be that dumb. Of course you would do it any other way. You just lost, and you made a bad decision. You had a guy who threw 27 pitches a day before. Why would you bring him in? Well, that's because that's the way we doped it out before the game. You know what that tells me? Is a rookie manager who can't manage the game in front of him. That's the worst criticism you can level at a manager or a coach. Right? We said that about Billy Donovan this year.
Yeah.
He can't coach the game in front of him. Pedro Grifol is not managing the game in front of him.
I mean, six pitches, 1-2-3 in the eighth, and Graveman gets through it. And Kelly, so I don't disagree with his Joe Kelly points about how great Joe Kelly had been pitching, except he threw a ton of pitches the day before. And your other kind of pseudo-closer, until Hendricks comes back today, threw only six pitches. Mm-hmm. That's like one batter. So it's not like he was out there taxed, couldn't go anymore, couldn't give you anymore. And especially because Kelly had pitched the day before, I just don't see the logic in not leaving Kendall Graveman in there.
He's Mike Esposito. I'm Steve Rosenblum. We're here until 10 a.m. We'll turn it over to Mark Grody. Mark Grody will be here from 10 till 12:45, taking you up to Cubs baseball, the pregame show at 12:45. Cubs and Rays. I mean, is that really fair? I mean, the Cubs, and it's a beautiful day. It will be a beautiful day for baseball, but the Rays, I mean, Cubs, can't they?
I
was going to say, can't they pick on someone their own size? But they just did, and they couldn't.
It is fair, and I'll tell you why, Rosie. Marcus Stroman is pitching today, and Marcus Stroman, his last outing against the Mets, was magnificent.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, Marcus Stroman, pitching well enough to get traded. He's Mike Esposito. I'm Steve Rosenblum. If you would like to vent, Cub fans, Sox fans, 312-644-6767. That will get you to our listener line and our text zone, 312-644-6767.
Some of the texters have some thoughts.
Share with the class.
From the 219, we love the 219. Good morning, gentlemen. Let's try to suck better than ever today, mm-hmm, with a baseball emoji next to it. So we appreciate that. Also, from the 224, MLB is looking for a city to start a new franchise. I nominate Chicago.
It would be it. It would be it. The Sox benefit by having the Royals and A's in their league, and they're still worse than the Cubs.
Well, here's
and one of the things that really is so aggravating when you watch the Sox. Everybody knew, including the new manager. Remember, he made the point, and he said it during the interview, if the White Sox were ready to play, we weren't going to beat them. That's what Pedro Grifol said through the prism of being on the Royals bench. Okay, so he determined we're going to be ready to play. Everybody else knew the other problems, right? They suck defensively. They're dumb on the bases. And they're not ready to play on top of that. Also, they're unreliable offensively. You don't know where they're going to go. And who's going to pitch well and who's not going to pitch well. It's a crapshoot. You're playing reliever roulette. Well, so let me tell you, with a new manager who isn't the narcoleptic-inducing Tony La Russa, what's changed? Rick Hahn got to make his choice. Rick Hahn made his choice. Remember, his first choice, you brought a name up earlier, A.J. Hinch.
A.J. Hinch.
Right? So
that was pre La Russa, right? He wanted Hinch.
Right.
Yes.
And it looked like he was going to be there because they had A.J. Hinch's signature on their website over the picture of Tony La Russa,
their
new manager.
Until La Russa.
But here's what we know about the Rick Hahn profile. He doesn't know how to hire a manager. Rick Hahn's bad at this. In my view, A.J. Hinch swore up and down he told his team to stop cheating. He told the Houston Astros to stop cheating. He broke several big screens that they were using when they were banging on trash cans, right? And his team didn't do it. So Rick Hahn chose a guy initially who has zero leadership and authority. A.J. Hinch couldn't get his own team to stop cheating. And now he chooses Pedro Grifol, who can't get his team ready every game. And they still suck defensively. And you saw it yesterday. Louis Robert, well, he's going to take a bad angle. He's running bad pass patterns. And then there's Tim Anderson, supposedly an elite shortstop, and he can't handle a... And listen to the excuse Pedro Grifol makes for Tim Anderson not being able to handle a ground ball to short.
What did you see on the play for Robert on the slide for the triple?
I think originally he broke to catch it, which he does that. He makes plays like that. The ball was sinking in hard, and then he tried his best to just keep it in front of him, and it didn't, and he couldn't. But originally the ball, as soon as it was hit, I mean, he broke to make the play, you know, which is what we want him to do. You know, what he does every day, he's the best at it. You know, and then ball does different things out there, you know, and then once he saw that he wasn't going to catch it, he tried to cut it off, and he didn't, he couldn't.
Did Tim have a play on that?
I thought he did. Yeah. I think I have to look at the video, but we had the infield in. You know, those are tough plays, man. I mean, it's contact, ball's coming at you. Those are tough plays. So I thought he had a play. I got to look at the video to see if we actually had one or not.
Those are tough plays. You know what? If you're a great shortstop, you make it. If you're Tim Anderson, you don't.
Dansby would make that play. And I'm not saying Cubs greater than Sox, so before you start. That you know what that reminded me of? Because that was the first time I had heard that. I had read it, but not heard it. That's the football, I don't want to talk about it excuse. Well, I got to look at the video.
Yeah, we got to look at the tape. You know what? We're going to take a break, and then we're going to look at the tape with Mark Potash of the Chicago Sun-Times. We will talk football. We will talk Bears. We'll see if we learned anything or how we get smarter, and I have a OTA question, among other things, for Mark Potash. I'm Steve Rosenblum. He's Mike Esposito. Thanks for joining us this Monday morning, this Monday holiday, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
Steve Rosenblum. Mike Esposito on Sports Radio 670, The Score.
Marquee Sports Network premieres the latest episode of Cubs Flicks today after Cubs postgame coverage featuring never-before-seen home movie film from the late 20s through the late 50s, including new footage of Cubs stars Ernie Banks, Hack Wilson, Gabby Hartnett, and more, narrated by Hall of Famer Pat Hughes. First episode premiered on opening day. Next episode today, my friend.
Pat Hughes' birthday on Saturday.
Happy birthday.
It was. And we gave us a chance to... He and Coom, and they were talking about the bobbleheads, the Billy Williams bobblehead with the wrong number, by the way. They didn't mention the wrong number, but it had number one on it. But they were talking about the bobbleheads and Billy Williams being a Hall of Famer, and Coom asks, well, did you get a call now that you're, you know, when you got into the Hall of Fame? It was a great exchange, and it was a wonderful example of radio, what baseball on the radio was for me. It was great, and I'm very happy for Pat going to the Hall of
Fame. Awesome.
It's terrific. Now, we're going to the Busey Bank Score Hotline. That's what we're doing here. Steve Rosenblum, Mike Esposito, the Busey Bank Score Hotline is brought to you by, brings you Mark Potash, building business, growing wealth since 1868. Mark Potash of the Sun-Times, we're here to talk some football because baseball sucks in Chicago. Hi, Potsy.
How you guys doing?
We're doing still, good.
Still May, right?
Huh?
It's still May, right?
Yeah. By a few days, you
okay.
Guys.
Yeah. All right. You're scaring me with these calls.
Get ahead of your trade debt. Well, May is when we look at Memorial Day and we determine who can do what, who can't. And now this is when you bring up the 2005 Astros, and they were in last place, and here they were in the World Series. And you bring up Davey Martinez's Washington Nationals.
Yep.
And they
Braves
were
a few years
19
ago.
And 31.
Yep.
Look at all that, right? Isn't that what you do to try to justify the rest of the season?
Yeah, clinging to the one example that kind of helps you out is it's kind of a Chicago thing, I think.
It is. So you I know, was Saturday.
There
was
a team that won three games once and then won 13 the next, but they had Peyton Manning at quarterback. So, you know, sometimes it doesn't quite work out.
Well, maybe that is that Justin Fields guy going to work out? I have a problem with people doing a particular thing, repeating what has become a mantra, which I think is stupid. But I'll run this by you since you're a man of wonderful logic and you can pick this apart. The idea that this is the Justin Fields No Excuses Tour is dead wrong, because every change that they've made that people say there's no excuse now is an excuse. It's a built-in excuse. You can already hear it. We heard it with Jay Cutler. Oh, this is new. They'll get to know each other next year. And next year's a year they got to make a decision. So whether it's the offensive line, redone except for Braxton Jones, and whether it's the tight end, hey, we got Aaron Rodgers tight end. Yeah, but Aaron Rodgers knew what to do with him. We don't know that Justin Fields will. Oh, we got DJ Moore. And that, well, that's great. That's wonderful. They've never played together, and we don't know what Darnell Mooney's going to show up as. This whole idea to me of No Excuses Tour is ridiculous, because everywhere you look, there's a potential excuse, and we've done this in this town for a lot of years. For anyone we were grasping at the hope of being an NFL caliber quarterback, what say you, Mark Potash?
Well, I think the no excuses thing, I think it's just that's just the effect. I mean, of course there's going to be excuses. I mean, what if he gets hurt? What if somebody else gets hurt? What if the first-round pick gets hurt? I mean, there will always be excuses no matter what happens, unless, you know, he blossoms like Peyton Manning did in his second year. But I think the effect, though, I'll be honest, is still the same, is that he will be judged. There's going to have to be a judgment made whether the Bears want to spend $30, $40 million a year on a quarterback at the end of this year. And that judgment is going to be based on what he had around him. And so if he fails this time, I think there will be excuses, but I don't think those excuses will hold water, and I don't think they'll get sucked in to giving a they could I guess but to giving like a Daniel Jones type of contract, and he earned it. I don't really have a real solid answer to the question. I get what you're saying, because there are always excuses, and you know it's not like they're totally loaded up. And if Fields does not progress, it's not just going to be on him, but the effect is last year, there's no way they could have said, this is not our guy. I think at the end of this year, just the way quarterbacks are rated and judged, they will be able to say yes or no, he is not our guy.
Well, Potsy,
but I agree, he'll probably fall right in the gray area, you know, somewhere just below the Daniel Jones thing, playoff contention instead of like a playoff victory, and make it a really tough decision. What are the odds that he's going to blossom with this new support and become the scourge of the league? You'd like that to happen, and in this division it could. But you just know the way things are running in Chicago these days, that he's going to fall right in that gray area where you got a tough decision. And that's quite that you'll be asking that same thing, excuses or not.
Well, Potsy, and it's funny that you brought up Daniel Jones, because that's literally what I was going to ask you about, is that the Giants had a very similar thing with Jones. And I, if you had asked anyone, I think before last season, it was like, all right, they'll probably have Jones this year, and then they'll be in the market for a QB. And instead, Jones went out and had a really nice season and earned himself an extension. Now, you can argue, is he going to be worth that? And I don't know. You know, I still am not the biggest Daniel Jones fan in the world. But I think putting the pieces around Fields that you did, even if they all come together, I mean, this team only won 3 games last year. So what's a successful season after a 3-win season?
Well, I think first of all, I think the 3-win thing is a little misleading, because they weren't trying to win. I think a lot of times you say how many three-win teams have really made progress the following year, and a lot of times those are 3-win teams that are on the way down. So of course they're going to get either worse or not get much better. If you really look at it, and I have looked at it, if you look at 3-win teams in the Bears situation, which is under a first-year coach with a young quarterback who, and both are back for the second year, the prospects of making advancement are actually pretty good. I think there's really only like 5 that fit that category, but they've all won at least 7 games the next year. Some have made the playoffs, some have won 10, 11 games. There's a better chance. I think it's misleading to say they're a 3-win team, frankly, because like I said, they weren't trying to win. I think they compare more favorably to teams in their category, which is, like I said, 3-win teams under a first-year head coach with both coach and the quarterback back the second year. I think it's better. So to answer your question, I think eight and eight, with Fields making progress. I think everything more than the record, the more important thing is where is Fields at the end of this year? Is he, you know, less than Daniel Jones, to use that as a barometer? Is he Justin Herbert after his first year? You know, where is he? And then, but the wins, and the wins will, and you know, if he's good, they'll win more games, especially in this division. So it's kind of the same thing. But I'm saying 8-9, 9-8, some kind of playoff contention in December, January. To me, that is acceptable. But I do say, I think the Bears, I have to be a little more positive on that and say that when you call them a three-win team, they're not quite the same as most three-win teams. I think they fit in a special category, like I said, and I think that gives you a little more hope that they could actually make a jump, because even teams like, I think the Lions are one of the teams that won seven, but there's a lot of teams, including that the 98 Manning team that went 3-13, again with a first-year coach, second-year quarterback, And they won 13 games.
Mark Potash of the Sun-Times joining us on The Score. Steve Rosenblum, Mike Esposito with you, talking Bears football here. News over the weekend, DeAndre Hopkins got released, bye-bye, from Los Cardinales. Is that somebody the Bears should be interested in? Are the Bears a team he would be interested in?
Well, first, it's a player the Bears should definitely be interested in. But on the second part, it's probably not a team that he would be interested in, because I think he wants to play for a team that he thinks is going to win, and the Bears do not look like they're going to win. So I don't think they're a good fit for him. And you know something? Who knows? You know, the way they're so scheme specific here, who knows if he's a good fit for them? I'm not sure. I don't know the way they think, but you would think, just based on it, that a guy like DeAndre Hopkins would be, you know, just what the Bears need. But I think they feel pretty good about what they have at wide receiver, and so I severely doubt that that would happen. But you know, with who knows what Poles is thinking, you never really know. But I just don't think it's a good fit, for Hopkins, because I think he's just looking for better. I think even his list includes all the teams that are, you know, ready to win now.
Right. No, and Potsy, it's funny. I think our line of discussion here, it all ties together, right? If Fields breaks out, then guys like Hopkins want to come and play here. And until that happens, they don't.
Well, you know, that's the funny thing. I was kind of jokingly pointing out that in like 2009, Steve, you might remember this, Brad Richards was a star on the Tampa Bay Lightning, and he was going to be traded at the trade deadline, and the Hawks wanted him, but he turned down a deal with the Hawks because he wanted to go to a team that had a chance to win the Stanley Cup. This is 2009. He went to the Stars. The Stars became a non-playoff team in the next 3 years. 2 years later, the Hawks were Stanley Cup champions. So sometimes the scenario changes, and the teams that you think are non-contenders become contenders, and the teams that are contenders become not. You know, things change. Let's put it that way. So, and that's again. I'm picking up the one example. I'm totally cherry picking on that. Guilty as charged. But it is interesting how things can change for players when they make these judgments about who's ready to win and who's not, because in the NFL, things just change, you know, from year to year.
One of the things, Mark, about the DeAndre Hopkins situation that I had read or had been speculated was that DeAndre Hopkins wanted to go someplace where not just win, but be the number one receiver. He wanted to be the guy. And DJ Moore is the guy here now. He's been designated as such. They traded for him. They said it. They traded for him with that intention, and I don't know if that factored into it, but it's odd to think the guy, well, you don't want to compete, you don't want to play, what a tandem that would be, and it would be a terrific tandem. But if that's what it was, then that speaks highly, I guess, of DJ Moore, or the Bears have already made their decision, and he doesn't want to deal with it.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm telling you the truth, I'm not sure about that, because it's kind of weird. That, you know, for one thing, we're not used to discussing number one receivers in Chicago, and I'm not joking. I mean, we just, you know, the whole concept, you know, it's like when Cutler complained about the Bears fans cheering when the offense was on the field. Well, you know, we had no idea. We were not used to that. I mean, we've never seen good offense, so we don't even know how to act when the offense. It's kind of the same thing with receivers. I mean, what's a number one receiver? Is the number one receiver the guy who just comes in and he's number one, or does he become the number one receiver by being by having chemistry with the quarterback? So I guess what I'm saying is I don't know how that dynamic actually works. But if it does work, as you say, I think I agree. The idea that DJ Moore is a number one guy is good as long as Chase Claypool is happy being the number two guy. And I think that's a huge question coming in because he's more of a DeAndre Hopkins type, Claypool that is, who probably sees himself. Well, probably says, "Yeah, I just want to be I just want to help the team." But in his mind, probably sees himself as the number one guy. I think that's why he's not in Pittsburgh.
Well, it's a huge year for Claypool too, right? I mean, last year was a bust, no matter how you look at it, for the Bears side or when he was still with Pittsburgh, whatever. So, in terms of Claypool personally, individually, he's got to be in his head thinking, "I need to have a huge year here because, you know, my future earnings depend on it." In terms of his next contract, and you know, will that be with the Bears? But you know, predictably, you've seen all the articles. Oh, Claypool's bounced back. You know, he needed an offseason. He was just getting to learn the offense, et cetera, et cetera. What's your take on Chase Claypool? We saw some good with Pittsburgh. We saw some bad with Pittsburgh. And we saw some bad last year with the Bears.
Well, I thought the most telling thing was from Justin Fields when he said his attitude change, when he referred to attitude change. Anytime you talk about a receiver with an attitude change, A, it acknowledges that there was probably an issue last year, and B, it at least provides some hope that he's going to conform to, you know, to what the Bears are looking for. But it's a huge test for Claypool, because I always say, again, I don't know, it's hard to say, but to me, sometimes these guys, as much as they want to be just a guy and be a team guy, and this, you know, they're so ego driven, it's hard to do it. I think it's a huge, you talk about a prove it year. Claypool has the biggest prove it year of almost anybody, maybe except for Fields, because, like you said, I mean, this is the year that he wants to get the contract, and he's going to probably have to maybe change his way a little bit. I think that's maybe what Fields was talking about with regard to the attitude changes. He's going to have to change his mindset a little bit about what kind of player he is to kind of be a contribute enough on this team, you know, to get the contract he wants. Now, who knows? There's all sorts of possible complications. What if he's getting just kind of complimentary numbers, but productive numbers, but he's not getting the numbers that he needs to get, you know, to get the deal he wants? Well, is he going to be happy with that? My guess is probably not. And so that's going to be Matt Eberflus's job, to kind of manage that situation, and Getsy's job too, as far as the offensive coordinator. He's going to, you know, Chase Claypool is going to have to manage himself. The Bears are going to have to manage Chase Claypool. It's a lot like having a guy like Brandon Marshall on your team, which, you know, was at one time, at the first year, was absolutely awesome and productive, and the second year kind of blew up in their face.
Yeah, that's the Brandon wreck. Marshall profile. Uh-huh. Wherever he goes, first year he's a Boy Scout. Next year he is Damien. All right, Potsy, thanks for your time and have a good holiday weekend. Appreciate it.
Okay, thanks. Same to you guys.
Thanks, Potsy.
Mark Potash of the Sun Times joining us here on The Score.
This afternoon, the Cubs take on the Rays at Wrigley Field. Our pregame right here on The Score begins at 12:45 with Zach Zabman. First pitch 1:20. That's on The Score in the Xfinity Cubs Radio Network. Cubs and Rays this afternoon.
Special kind of BS from Scottie Pippen. We're going to revisit that. We want to share that with you because it just keeps getting dumber. I didn't have a chance to. I had 3 hours Saturday. I still didn't have a chance to cover all of it. We're going to try to catch up with that next on The Score. Mike Esposito, Steve Rosenblum with you. Thank you for joining us this Memorial Day. Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Steve Rosenblum, Mike Esposito on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Welcome in, welcome back. Steve Rosenblum, Mike Esposito with you, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. We're here till 10 o'clock. We'll turn it over to Mark Grody. Mark will be here. It's sort of like the washing machine, the Saturday suckage washing machine. We're going to turn it over to Grody. 10 to 12:45, Cubs baseball. The pregame show is Zach Zabin, and then Cubs and Rays, and after the game, Gabe Ramirez will be after the post game. Gabe Ramirez will be here till 8 o'clock. So, over the weekend, and you heard it at the end of last week on The Score, Mark Schanowski, who co-hosts he was a guest on The Score. He and Stacey King, they are the stars of the Give Me the Hot Sauce podcast, and their guest was Scottie Pippen. Perhaps you've heard of him.
Nice guest, a good get, as they say.
Yeah. Scotty had stuff to say, and and you would say, if you know this story, of course, Scotty had something to say. And he had a lot to say about Michael Jordan and Phil Jackson and the team. And here's one that sort of synthesizes the utter hypocrisy. Scotty has no idea what he's saying or what it looks like. He really needs a friend. Here's what he was asked about. The subject started with Phil Jackson and would go into Michael Jordan.
You know, you play for the guy. What's your relationship now with Phil?
Even with the game, you know, I look back at my years playing with the Bulls and how things sort of ended up. Like, I just don't know if he was ever in my corner, you know? And I say that to say him as well as Michael, just kind of how things were handled the last couple of years going through their contract, like they want one more year and this and that, you know, and I'm just sitting over there like, I don't care how many years they give you. I'm out of here.
Wow.
You know, so that was, you know, he just really turned sour to me his last couple of years of coaching. Not that that took anything away from me as a player or how I played the game or anything, but it was more, he became selfish. And when you're around selfish people, then things just, it really was the breakup of our team, to be honest. You know, one selfish guy on the team, another selfish guy coaching the team. It was time for a divorce.
Okay. Mike Esposito, help me out. That was Stacey King on the Give Me the Hot Sauce podcast. That was Scottie Pippen. Stacey King with a question. Former teammate of Scottie Pippen's. And Stacey King and Mark Schanowski on the Give Me the Hot Sauce podcast. You can get that on the Odyssey platform. Open up the Odyssey app, AUDACY. Search 670 The Score, and you will find it. The Odyssey app. Speaking about selfish, was it Phil Jackson or Michael Jordan who refused to go back into a playoff game against the Knicks with 1.8 seconds left? Which one was it, Phil Jackson or Michael Jordan?
I was going to ask you to give me 1.8 seconds to think about it, but you got the 1.8 in there ahead of me. Yeah, that's, if Scotty has any advisors, agents, whatever, it would probably be do wise to get in his ear and tell him to stop talking about stuff like that. It just, like, why, like, is it a jealousy thing? Is it a, you know?
Of course it is.
Come on. It's one of the most beloved franchises and beloved teams in the history of sports. Forget about the sport, right? The Jordan Bulls, you can call them whatever you want. I call them the Jordan Bulls. Sorry, Scotty. But I will say this. When Jordan went to play baseball, who kept that Bulls team afloat and who was an MVP candidate that year, right? Scottie Pippen had a fantastic year, right? Mm-hmm. 1994, whatever, 93, 94. But why come out now and rip on?
Because what else does he have? He's got to sell bourbon somehow, keep his name in the news, I guess.
I don't get it.
Let me point this out about the selfishness. This is the height of hypocrisy. This is what he says. He had talked about how he didn't like the way he was portrayed in The Last Dance, right? We talked about how he came off badly. It was a Michael Jordan thing.
Well, how did he come off? I didn't think he came off badly.
Of course. Whatever. What? I'm not saying it's logical.
No.
This is Scottie Pippen we're dealing with. All right? So you listen to this and you go, wait a minute. Why did you do it then? What was the point? If you knew it was a Michael Jordan production, why do it? And then in talking about and wrapping this all together, The Last Dance and the selfishness, when I talked about it Saturday, I didn't get to this. A Twitter follower named Dan Shaltiel said he just literally just binged The Last Dance again. And he pointed out this martyr, Scottie Pippen, Or maybe it was the selfish Scottie Pippen who said he had back surgery to start the season in 97-98, not in the summer because he didn't want to bleep up his summer. Who's being selfish there? Can we put that question to Scottie Pippen? Who's being selfish there?
I don't remember the quote exactly, but it was something to the effect of, and this is from Jordan basically saying there's no way that those titles happen without Scotty. I mean, and this is from The Last Dance. And again, I didn't rewatch it. I don't remember it off the top of my head, but it just seems
it's true. Neither of them won a title without the other.
100%. And it just seems odd. And to what he's saying about the inevitable divorce at the end, okay, I get that, right? I mean, with all of the hype and all the scrutiny, and you had all the Rodman stuff going on, and, you know, free agency stuff, and, you know, they didn't want to pay Jordan because he was making a ridiculous sum of money at the time, $30 million a year. You remember Reinsdorf saying, I don't remember the exact quote, but something to the effect of, I'm going to regret doing this at some point, you know, paying Jordan all that, the 1 year, $30 million or whatever it was. Pippen's contract, which they told him, you know, you're not going to like this contract a few years from now when he wanted the long-term deal. They gave him the long-term deal because he insisted on it. And then a few years later, he hated the long-term deal. And it's like, well, we told you not to sign it. Well, whose fault is that?
And then all he did was whine about it.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you signed it. What's your name worth? Or do you want to just be selfish?
And I have read this too. And you'll recall as Pippen did exit the Bulls, it was a sign and trade with Houston. And they made sure, and I'm not saying this was all done in the Bulls, you know, because the Bulls were being so magnanimous and blah, blah, blah. They did get him paid. He got the max amount of money that way because the Bulls did the sign and trade as opposed to just letting him go in free agency. So
773 texter. He's being honest about how he feels. Anyone who goes negative is dumped on. You guys suck.
Well, that's true.
We do suck. But here's where 773 texter. Here's the point we're making. The point is as obvious as the one atop your head, 773 texter. He's a hypocrite. Don't start telling me how selfish Michael Jordan is, how selfish Phil Jackson is, when you have been the height of selfish. You acted like a baby. You're not going to go into the game because with 1.8 seconds left because the play wasn't called for you. You're the one who's not going to have back surgery in the summer because you don't want your summer messed up. Who's being selfish at that point? That's what we're saying. That's the point we're making. Scotty needs a friend to tell him. This is like, dude, shut up. Now, in sports radio, we don't want him to shut up.
No, please keep talking.
Yes, we need that. But, dude, he needs a friend to say, shut up.
No, and like, think about it from this perspective. You know, any Bulls ambassadorships or, you know, glad-handing alumni, whatever it is that they do with old players where they keep paying you to be around, why would you want this guy around now? He's bad-mouthing the greatest player ever, the greatest player in your history of your franchise, your greatest coach in the history of your franchise. He was a member of all these championship teams. So he could do this. He could cruise. He would just have to do nothing and make a nice living, still get to go to the game, still get to be a presence around the team, whatever. But now, I mean, how do you do that now?
Well, you don't. That's it.
And well, now you don't.
We ran out of time. We don't get to play Scottie Pippen saying Michael Jordan was horrible.
We're paraphrasing.
We'll get to that later on. I'm Steve Rosenblum. He's Mike Esposito. Leo Stotterher is doing a terrific job of staying awake during the show on Memorial Day. And we'll take a break when we come back, top of the hour. We talked about the White Sox and Cubs. There was much, the White Sox, as they continue to soil the bed, there's much gnashing of teeth. And the embarrassment that is the White Sox now for trying to gaslight you and saying everything's different, it's not different, and they suck, and they're awful. There are people who say, blow it up. And there's a problem with that. There's a big problem with that. Espo and I will discuss that after this. I'm Steve Rosenblum. He's Mike Esposito, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Steve Rosenblum. Mike Esposito on Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Welcome in, welcome back. Steve Rosenblum, Mike Esposito with you, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. We're here till 10 o'clock. We'll turn it over to Mark Grody. Mark will be here. It's sort of like the washing machine, the Saturday suckage washing machine. We're going to turn it over to Grody. 10 to 12:45, Cubs baseball. The pregame show is Zach Zabin. And then Cubs and Rays. And after the game, Gabe Ramirez will be after the post game. Gabe Ramirez will be here till 8 o'clock. So over the weekend, and you heard it at the end of last week on The Score, Mark Schanowski, who co-hosts he was a guest on The Score. He and Stacey King, they are the stars of the Give Me the Hot Sauce podcast. And their guest was Scottie Pippen. Perhaps you've heard of him.
Nice guest. A good get, as they say.
Yeah. Scotty had stuff to say. And and you would say, if you know this story, of course, Scotty had something to say. And he had a lot to say about Michael Jordan and Phil Jackson and the team. And here's one that sort of synthesizes the utter hypocrisy. Scotty has no idea what he's saying or what it looks like. He really needs a friend. Here's what he was asked about. The subject started with Phil Jackson and would go into Michael Jordan.
You know, you play for the guy. What's your relationship now with Phil?
Even with the game, you know, I look back at my years playing with the Bulls and how things sort of ended up. Like, I just don't know if he was ever in my corner, you know? And I say that to say him as well as Michael, just kind of how things were handled the last couple of years going through their contract, like they want one more year and this and that, you know, and I'm just sitting over there like, I don't care how many years they give you, I'm out of here.
Wow.
You know, so that was, you know, he just really turned sour to me his last couple of years of coaching. Not that that took anything away from me as a player or how I played the game or anything, but it was more, he became selfish. And when you're around selfish people, then things just, it really was the breakup of our game, to be honest. You know, one selfish guy on the team, another selfish guy coaching the team. It was time for a divorce.
Okay. Mike Esposito, help me out. That was Stacey King on the Give Me the Hot Sauce podcast. That was Scottie Pippen. Stacey King with a question. Former teammate of Scottie Pippen's. And Stacey King and Mark Schanowski on the Give Me the Hot Sauce podcast. You can get that on the Odyssey platform. Open up the Odyssey app, AUDACY. Search 670 The Score, and you will find it. The Odyssey app. Speaking about selfish, was it Phil Jackson or Michael Jordan who refused to go back into a playoff game against the Knicks with 1.8 seconds left? Which one was it, Phil Jackson or Michael Jordan?
I was going to ask you to give me 1.8 seconds to think about it, but you got the 1.8 in there ahead of me. Yeah, that's, if Scotty has any advisors, agents, whatever, it would probably be do wise to get in his ear and tell him to stop talking about stuff like that. It just, like, why, like, is it a jealousy thing? Is it a, you know?
Of course it is.
Come on. It's one of the most beloved franchises and beloved teams in the history of sports. Forget about the sport, right? The Jordan Bulls, you can call them whatever you want. I call them the Jordan Bulls. Sorry, Scotty. But I will say this. When Jordan went to play baseball, who kept that Bulls team afloat and who was an MVP candidate that year, right? Scottie Pippen had a fantastic year, right? Mm-hmm. 1994, whatever, 93, 94. But why come out now and rip on?
Because what else does he have? He's got to sell bourbon somehow, keep his name in the news, I guess.
I don't get it.
Let me point this out about the selfishness. This is the height of hypocrisy. This is what he says. He had talked about how he didn't like the way he was portrayed in The Last Dance, right? We talked about how he came off badly. It was a Michael Jordan thing.
Well, how did he come that. Off? I didn't he think thought, he came off badly.
Of course. Whatever. What? I'm not saying it's logical.
No.
This is Scottie Pippen we're dealing with. All right? So you listen to this and you go, wait a minute. Why did you do it then? What was the point? If you knew it was a Michael Jordan production, why do it? And then in talking about and wrapping this all together, The Last Dance and The Selfishness, when I talked about it Saturday, I didn't get to this. A Twitter follower named Dan Sheltiel said he just literally just binged The Last Dance again. And he pointed out this martyr Scottie Pippen, or maybe it was the selfish Scottie Pippen, who said he had back surgery to start the season in 97-98, not in the summer because he didn't want to bleep up his summer. Who's being selfish there? Can we put that question to Scottie Pippen? Who's being selfish there?
I don't remember the quote exactly. But it was something to the effect of, and this is from Jordan basically saying there's no way that those titles happen without Scotty. I mean, and this is from The Last Dance. And again, I didn't rewatch it. I don't remember it off the top of my head, but it just seems
it's true. Neither odd. Of them won a title without the other.
100%. And it just seems odd. And to what he's saying about the inevitable divorce at the end, okay, I get that, right? I mean, with all of the hype and all the scrutiny, and you had all the Rodman stuff going on, and, you know, free agency stuff, and, you know, they didn't want to pay Jordan because he was making a ridiculous sum of money at the time, $30 million a year. You remember Reinsdorf saying, I don't remember the exact quote, but something to the effect of, I'm going to regret doing this at some point, you know, paying Jordan all that, the 1 year, $30 million or whatever it was. Pippen's contract, which they told him, you know, you're not going to like this contract a few years from now, when he wanted the long-term deal. They gave him the long-term deal because he insisted on it. And then a few years later, he hated the long-term deal. And it's like, well, we told you not to sign it. Well, whose fault is that?
And then all he did was whine about it.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you signed it. What's your name worth? Or do you want to just be selfish?
And I have read this too. And you'll recall, as Pippen did exit the Bulls, it was a sign and trade with Houston. And they made sure, and I'm not saying this was all done in the Bulls, you know, because the Bulls were being so magnanimous and blah, blah, blah. They did get him paid. He got the max amount of money that way because the Bulls did the sign and trade as opposed to just letting him go in free agency. So
773 texter. He's being honest about how he feels. Anyone who goes negative is dumped on. You guys suck.
Well, that's true.
We do suck. But here's where 773 texter, here's the point we're making. The point is as obvious as the one atop your head, 773 texture. He's a hypocrite. Don't start telling me how selfish Michael Jordan is, how selfish Phil Jackson is, when you have been the height of selfish. You acted like a baby. You're not going to go into the game because with 1.8 seconds left because the play wasn't called for you. You're the one who's not going to have back surgery in the summer because you don't want your summer messed up. Who's being selfish at that point? That's what we're saying. That's the point we're making. Scotty needs a friend to tell him. This is like, dude, shut up. Now, in sports radio, we don't want him to shut up.
No, please keep talking.
Yes, we need that. But, dude, he needs a friend to say, shut up.
No, and like, think about it from this perspective. You know, any Bulls ambassadorships or, you know, glad-handing alumni, whatever it is that they do with old players where they keep paying you to be around, why would you want this guy around now? He's bad-mouthing the greatest player ever, the greatest player in your history or franchise, your greatest coach in the history of your franchise. He was a member of all these championship teams, so he could do this. He could cruise. He would just have to do nothing and make a nice living, still get to go to the game, still get to be a presence around the team, whatever. But now, I mean, how do you do that now?
Well, you don't. That's it.
And well, now you don't, exactly.
We ran out of time. We don't get to play Scottie Pippen saying Michael Jordan was horrible.
We're paraphrasing.
We'll get to that later on. I'm Steve Rosenblum. He's Mike Esposito. Leo Stotterher is doing a terrific job of staying awake during the show on Memorial Day. And we'll take a break when we come back, top of the hour. We talked about the White Sox and Cubs. There was much, the White Sox, as they continue to soil the bed, there's much gnashing of teeth and the embarrassment that is the White Sox now for trying to gaslight you and saying everything's different, it's not different, and they suck, and they're awful. There are people who say, blow it up. And there's a problem with that. There's a big problem with that. Espo and I will discuss that after this. I'm Steve Rosenblum. He's Mike Esposito, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.